Hi, everyone. This is Julie Rowe with AFT Michigan. We're about ready to get started for our teletown hall. Thank you so much for joining us. We've just given it a few moments to get everyone dialed in, and now we'll turn it over to AFSCME Council 25 President Larry Roehrig. Thank you so much, President.
Hello, everyone, and thank you, sister. I'm AFSCME Council 25 President Larry Roehrig, and I am so proud of our members who work as support staff in schools, colleges, and universities across the state of Michigan. We're grateful to our colleagues at the Michigan Education Association and the American Federation of Teachers Michigan, and also to Governor Whitmer and Superintendent Rice for joining us on this call today as we discuss the impact of the coronavirus outbreak on public education in Michigan, and quite frankly, also the impact of the governor's recent health announcement. As we say in Michigan AFSCME Council 25, we make Michigan happen. It's the tens of thousands of people on this call and the thousands more who could not join us because, quite frankly, they're working right now as I speak, who make Michigan schools, colleges, and universities happen. Oftentimes, support personnel, you know, the custodians, food service workers, secretaries, bus drivers, and so many more important people, quite frankly, just get overlooked. But now, more than ever, our communities need to see how essential our work is to the well-being and the education of our students. It's an understatement to say that this has been a trying time for all of us. Our lives have been upended and changed in a very short and important period of time. But you, the people who are charged with making sure students and education across Michigan are able to learn and grow in our schools, have risen to this challenge. Of course, we are all concerned about whether or not our employers will continue paying us. We know that in the vast majority of school districts and higher education institutions, administrators and boards have committed to maintaining payroll. But guess what? We know that's not the case everywhere. We are in constant communication with our great governor's office, with lawmakers and administrators to address these challenges. Your local union presidents and our staff representatives are the best source of information on these issues, and we're working hand in hand with them. I'd like everyone to know that some of our speakers will be able to take questions during this teletown hall. Remember, if you have a question, please press zero at any time to get you into the queue or the little question box to ask your question. And now, I'll hand it over to my good friend, my colleague, the American Federation of Teachers, Michigan President, Brother David Hecker. Brother?
Hi, this is Jessica from MEA. Do you have a question? Hello?
David Hecker?
David, are you on?
Sorry for the technical difficulties.
I'm sorry. My fault. Thank you, Larry, and thank you to our sisters and brothers of AFSCME Council 25. I'd like to thank the members of the AFSCME Council 25 for joining us, as well as our sisters and brothers from the Michigan Education Association. It's good to be here with all of you, joined together in solidarity as education workers and trade unionists. As Larry said, I'm David Hecker, president of AFT Michigan, and I want to welcome our members, pre-K 16 educators from throughout the state of Michigan. Thank you, teachers, faculty, and graduate employees for working hard to engage your students in learning. And thank you, as Larry said, to support staff who are working diligently to continue providing meals to students, keeping families informed, ensuring our buildings are safe, and so much more. The work you do matters now more than ever. Thank you. While many people are working from home right now, many have reported to their buildings to do essential work that cannot be done remotely, and in many cases doing work outside of their usual responsibilities. For instance, we have paraprofessionals who are helping prepare meals for students and families, and bus drivers delivering meals door-to-door. We have graduate employees and faculty working hard to convert to online learning for college and university students. Teachers creating YouTube channels so they can post videos of themselves reading stories to share with students. Art teachers providing ideas and instructions for kids and adults to engage their creativity at home. And to make sure students who don't have access to computers or internet at home are also engaged in learning, teachers and support staff are preparing and delivering worksheets directly to students. At a time when there is so much fear and confusion, find hope and inspiration in the work you are all doing right now. So thank you. These are just a few examples of tremendous work happening around our state. I know many of you have questions about how to continue doing this essential work and protecting health and safety for yourselves, your students, your families, and our communities. And I'm pleased we're joined today by Michael Lohman, who works in the AFT Health Issues Department, who will be able to share some information and answer your questions later in this call. I know many of you also have questions about how long this school closure might last and how long you'll continue to receive pay. As President Roerich said, we're working hard with administrators, lawmakers, Superintendent Rice, the Michigan Department of Education, and Governor Whitmer on this issue, and we'll provide more information during this call. After the call is over, I encourage our members to go to our website at aftmichigan.org, which has information on contacting your legislator to urge them to forgive the school closure days and ensure all staff continues getting paid. Now I'd like to turn it over to my friend, my union sister, and a real champion for public education, MEA President Paula Herbart.
Thank you so much, David. I'm Paula Herbart, the president of the Michigan Education Association. I want to tell you how absolutely proud I am of the work education professionals across the state of Michigan are doing in this crisis. Larry and David mentioned a few examples, and I know there are so many more. We have members arming themselves with gloves and hand sanitizer to pass out meals and patients across the state, making sure that all of our students get what they need and then they head home. This is critically important work. Schools around the country may be closed, but there are nearly 30 million students who rely on school breakfast and lunch. Without those meals, many of them wouldn't eat. And so at schools all over the state, hundreds of thousands of families are able to come in cars, on foot, or by bike, keep a safe distance from each other, and collect bags of breakfast and lunch, like pancakes and berries, taco salads, carrots, apples, chips, and milk. We also know how important it is for our buildings to be sanitized and clean for when school is able to start again. So our custodians and other staff are working hard to make sure classrooms are ready for students and educators. And to my fellow teachers, we're no stranger to improvising or doing whatever's necessary to engage students. But the way that you've all banded together to share resources with one another and with parents is nothing short of awe-inspiring. This crisis has shown us who we are, professionals dedicated, working together to provide the best education possible for our students. This has not been easy, but I haven't heard anyone complain. And as a matter of fact, the question we most how else can I help? What else do you need from me? During today's call, we're going to provide more information on the current status of the state's forgiving the closure date. In the vast majority of our districts, administrators to continue paying staff during the closure period. However, some have not made that commitment. We need the legislature to act to forgive these days and ensure all staff are paid during this time. Please visit MEA.org after the call for information on contacting your local legislators. These are uncertain times, to be sure. But one of the things that I do know for certain is we are all so fortunate to have a strong, decisive, principled leader like Governor Gretchen Whitmer. She has continued to lead by example, making sound, fact-based decisions in the best interest of every one of our states. Thank you, Governor Whitmer, for taking the time to talk directly to Michigan's education professionals. I'm going to turn it over to you now. Governor Whitmer?
Thank you, Paula and David, and thank you, everyone who has made time to be on this call. I am incredibly grateful for the work that you do in all the different ways that you show up for people in our state. And, you know, as the governor of the state, you know, 15 months ago when I took this oath of office, no one could ever have anticipated we'd be confronting a global pandemic. No one would have ever anticipated that we would be so ill-prepared as a nation to meet the needs of our people in this pandemic. And I got to tell you, making decisions in a way that is always based on science and always based on health and the best interests of the people of our state, each of these decisions has weighed heavily on me. I know there are ramifications from sending our students home and closing our schools. And one of the hardest parts of that was knowing that there were 750,000 kids in Michigan who relied on meals at school on top of the important education that they were going to miss. That was another important factor. And seeing our educators rise to the challenge to help meet this need is one of the premier sources of inspiration for me over these last few days. I went on Friday to help pass out meals in the Lansing schools, and between Friday and today, our number of COVID-19 positives has doubled, and it's growing exponentially. I was on the phone most of the weekend with experts from across the country so that I was making decisions based on really curtailing the curve of where we're headed, which looks a lot like Italy right now. I've issued a number of orders, and yet people were still congregating, and the spread of the virus was continuing to grow. And so today I issued the stay home, stay safe, save lives order. That is requiring that but for essential needs and essential services, everyone else should be staying at home at all times unless you've got to be out for groceries or filling a prescription or some essential need. This is going to have an impact on our economy. There's no question. It's getting a lot of input from business organizations about not doing this. But after listening to the experts, I know this is what we have to do right now for the public health. Just to tell you something that I mentioned in my press conference moments ago. You know, generally you would anticipate that the federal government would have been planning for this for months, would have been stockpiling the important medical equipment that we know has been needed elsewhere in the world that has confronted this virus before we did. Unfortunately, last week, the president told the nation's governors that we were essentially on our own to find this equipment ourselves. When we got our allotment from the national stockpile, we got enough masks and face shields and gowns to cover one shift of our hospital workers, not even one full day of hospital workers in Michigan, one shift. That's how serious the situation is. The trajectory that we're on, we could have 7 million people infected in the next couple of weeks, a million of them needing hospital services. And that's why taking this aggressive step right now was really important to give breathing room to our hospital system in hopes that we can not overwhelm and make a crisis much worse than it already is. So I appreciate your patience as we are going through this. It's not easy. I know that a lot of sacrifices are being made by people all across the state, but if everyone does their part, we can shorten the amount of time that we're confronting this, we can save lives, and we can all be a part of the solution, and we all absolutely have to be. And so there's no community that I think has been greater support and more encouraging and stepped up to meet need than the education community. And that's why I wanted to be here to thank you, to share with you kind of the thought process and why these actions are so important now, and just to tell you how much I appreciate you.
Thank you, Governor Whitmer. Your leadership, as Paula said, during this unprecedented time has been tremendous. I want to remind folks that if you have a question, please press arrow to get into the question queue. As many of you know, our state superintendent, Dr. Michael Rice, the State Board of Ed, and the entire staff at MDE has been working so hard to provide guidance and support to school districts and educators as we navigate this uncharted territory. Thank you, Dr. Rice, for your leadership. And now I'll turn it over to you, sir.
Thank you, David, and thank you for your leadership over many years in this state. Good morning, everyone. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today. More importantly, I appreciate the work that you are doing in this unprecedented period to continue to serve children in whatever ways are possible under these enormously difficult circumstances. 13 days ago, when we began our last state board meeting, there were no known positive cases of COVID-19 in Michigan. By the time we ended the board meeting, there were two. 2 days later, with 12 known cases of COVID-19 in the state, the governor closed schools for 3 weeks. I appreciate the governor's leadership during this crisis. The day of the closure announcement, we applied for a federal waiver to permit local school districts to serve meals in non-congregate, that is, non-school cafeteria settings, drive-up meals, walk-up meals, and even buses that aren't operating to pick up children, but rather to drop off food at bus stops. The following day, we did several conference calls with a total of 1,100 food service directors and superintendents. Once granted, the federal waiver has permitted more than 1,700 food service sites across the state to feed children and families over the last week. Thanks to those of you who have been among the many to have stepped up to help serve in this moment of crisis. Many of you are rightly concerned at this time about your pay or the pay of family, friends, or colleagues. You're concerned about what's going to happen with the summer. You're concerned about whether these state of emergency days count as instructional days. I don't get to make any of these decisions in my current role, but let me tell you who does, and by extension, what I am advocating for with your union leaders as partners. I believe that everyone who works for a school district and who had anticipated working for a school district through the end of the school year should be paid as such, whether salaried or hourly, whether a contracted service provider, instructional or non-instructional, whether a full-time employee or a substitute employee. I don't make those decisions. The state legislature could make those decisions globally for workers in the 842 districts across the state that serve almost 1.5 million public school children, and I've advocated the state legislature do so. In the absence of state legislative action, many local school districts have taken it upon themselves with their considerable authority to do so. I believe that the days during this state of emergency should count as instructional days, but neither I nor the State Department of Education have the authority to make that determination. Only the state legislature does. There was some confusion about the department's guidance late last week on this subject, so let me be clear. Without the action of the state legislature, we have no authority to count days in which no one attends school as school days. State legislature needs to act, as it needed to act last year regarding the 5 polar vortex days, to indicate that the days count as instruction. Such action would fund local school districts and would permit pay for school employees and contracted service providers and substitutes. I believe that we ought not to extend the school year into the summer, and certainly not deep into the summer. Again, this is my opinion. It is not a directive or determination. State Department of Education doesn't determine the number of days and hours required for public school in the state of Michigan. State legislature does. State Department simply enforces the law in this area. So with your union leadership, I'm advocating that the state legislature count all state of emergency days as instructional days, mandate that employees and contracted service providers who are going to work get paid for that work, whether that work manifests itself in precisely the same way or not, and that the school year not be extended into the summer. Last Tuesday, our state board president, Cassandra Ulbrich, and I wrote U.S. Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos to urge a waiver of the federal requirement to do annual state tests. Friday, the Secretary of Education announced a waiver process for these tests. The department applied and received preliminary approval for the elimination of state tests for this year. We now need the state legislature to waive state law associated with these very same annual state tests. Similarly, we are urging the state legislature to set aside the teacher and administrator evaluation requirements for a year. Finally, we are urging the state legislature to set aside the retention portion of the Read by Grade 3 law. Whether you like the idea of retentions as a way of improved literacy, and I don't, and I don't know anyone in the department that does, it seems obvious that if we don't have state tests, the basis upon which the law required us to consider those retentions, we ought not to be doing retentions this year at all. Two more issues. There's been some question about graduation requirements. We'll be issuing guidance on this subject soon. In a nutshell, all students on track for graduation should be able to graduate. Let me say it again. All students on track for graduation should be able to graduate. There is flexibility within the Michigan Merit Curriculum at the local level. Again, we want to work with local school districts so that children who are on track to graduate are still able to do so, and we believe that we will be able to do so within the constraints of the Michigan Merit Curriculum. Finally, we are working with the administration and association leaders to figure out how to create greater access to virtual learning. As this crisis continues, it will be increasingly important for the 842 local school districts in the state and their staff to piece together to the absolute extent possible an alternative form of education for our children in the interim. Many of you are currently already working to make that happen. This won't be and isn't easy, and it won't be without profound concerns about equity and access. That said, the answer can't simply be to wait. As such, we've begun to connect and to convene thought partners on this subject, again, in conjunction with the administration and local school leaders. In conclusion, I thank you all for the tremendous support that you have provided for children and families during this trying time. We will get through this challenging moment in our history. We need to do so with minimal adverse impact on our children and families, many of whom struggled substantially before this crisis. I thank you for our leadership and partnership together and look forward to our work. I'm proud to be a Michigan educator with all of you. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Rice. We are so appreciative of your leadership and your willingness to take these questions. Can we have the first question, please, Julie?
Absolutely, and I just want to remind folks to press zero if you have a question to get in the queue. And I'm going to go live with Nate Farber from Oakland Township. Nate, why don't you ask your question of Dr. Rice right now?
All right. My question is, if the school already has the budget to pay both salaried and hourly employees, I understand that substitute teachers are contracted through a different service. Why aren't the schools just automatically paying the staff through the next contract?
Okay, I'm going to share my thoughts, but remember there are 842 local school districts in a local control state. So those are questions that may have specific resonance in a local school district or school district community. And I am aware that different school districts are receiving different advice from legal counsel. That said, I believe if your premise holds and the state legislature permits these days to be counted as instructional days, and therefore these days are funded under Michigan law, that everyone who was previously expected to be working and was expecting to be working during this time, including not simply contracted employees, but hourly employees, including not simply employees themselves, contracted service providers, including substitute teachers, should be paid. Are there some complexities around that? Yes. But that's what I believe should be the case. But again, not a decision maker in this particular circumstance. It's something that I can influence in advocating with the state legislature as your local union leaders, your state leaders have done and will continue to do, and I'm going to continue to do. But ultimately, these decisions, short of a state legislative action, are going to be made at the local school district level. And I can understand local school superintendents and local school boards wanting to see the action of the legislature to approve these days as instructional days, and therefore to permit the funding associated with these days before they make any final determinations. All the more reason why the state legislature needs to act immediately.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Rice. Our next question comes from Roseanne Todaro from Macomb County. Roseanne, you're live with your question.
Hello. I was think my question's been answered, but I was looking for information about the test-mandated information that we have to do in regards to NWA testing, PSAT testing, and MSTEP. If we do return back to school, that is going to take additional 5 days out of a curriculum that we're already pressed to do, and I'm hoping that this gets excused from us having to do along with any of the observation stuff.
Yes, ma'am, I understand, and I think that under the current circumstances, that makes perfect sense.
Wonderful. And then our next question is coming from Laura Wisanen from Lansing, Michigan. Laura?
Yes. Hello?
Yes, you're live, Laura. Would you please ask your question?
Okay, my question has to do with the fact of being paid. I am a lunch aide. We are 30 hours and under. We don't get the benefits everyone else does, which means if we aren't working, we're not getting paid. It's usually 3 hours a day, so I am worried about that. I just wondered what was going to happen. You know, I know we're talking about the payroll stuff now with the different districts, so apparently I've got to wait on that. But I am worried about that since I just work 3 hours a day.
Yes, ma'am, and I understand your concern. I believe you ought to be paid during the days of emergency. Would like the legislature to act in that regard. At a minimum, would like the legislature to quickly indicate that all of these days of emergency count as instructional days, which would permit the funding of these days for local school districts, which would relieve the logic, which would eliminate any logic for local school districts not to pay you, so that they would, in a sense, have the wherewithal to pay you. So I'm 100% in agreement. There are a number of us, including your union leaders, that are advocating very strongly on your behalf.
Thank you, Dr. Rice. Our next question is also kind of in a similar vein, but a little bit specific, from Jerome Gibson from Jackson. Jerome, you are live now.
Yes, how are you doing today?
Great.
Hello.
Thanks. What's your question? Oh.
Yes, will yearly time be credited towards the pension during this time?
So I cannot answer that. It's a great question, but it's a question for others to answer. I think the answer to the question should be yes. But again, those are questions that would have to be answered by the retirement system folks.
And Dr. Rice, the Office of Retirement Services did advise all local school districts and local employers in the MIPSR system to continue reporting. They should be paying on their payroll to the MIPSR system, and they should be reporting service time as earned for retirement. And so that is what districts have been advised to do by the Office of Retirement Services. And then we recommend folks reach out to your local union president to verify that your local district is doing that work. Thank you, Jerome. Our next question comes from, from Chris Thompson in Clinton Township. Chris, you're live.
Hi, I was just wondering, what is the likelihood that we return to school on April 13th?
Sir, I cannot answer that. I think given the governor's executive order today, governor and her team, her public health team, will be monitoring public health over the next few weeks. Governor will make that determination in the best interest of public health.
Thank you. And the next question is from Lisa Shemansky in Allen Park. Lisa, you're live.
Hi. Yes, I had two questions. The first one was, and I think it's already been answered, was will the seniors class of 2020 graduate on time? And my other question was how we should be handling the IEP transition meetings for children who are going to a different school, particularly our eighth graders who will be going into ninth grade next year. They're losing instructional time, and I'm just wondering for special education if that will impede them being able to move up.
Yes. So with respect to graduation, as I mentioned before, I don't think that any senior who was previously on track to graduate prior to this crisis should be denied the opportunity to graduate. Every senior on track to graduate before this crisis should be able to graduate. There's substantial flexibility within the Michigan Merit Curriculum. We're going to be issuing guidance associated with that flexibility. We'll be working with school districts associated with that flexibility. And we do not want any senior to be adversely affected as a function of this crisis any more than he or she already was by virtue of the very quick cessation of his, her, their senior years. No child should be denied the opportunity to graduate. With respect to your question about special education and special needs children, federal government has recently offered guidance in this area and additional guidance in this area. It is going to be distributed this afternoon. We anticipate from Michigan Department of Education that will provide some measure of clarity for local school districts. We're going to have to work our way through the issue of working with special needs children. It is a complicated area. I will tell you that the U.S. DOE guidance helps us in this regard. It is not perfectly determinative, but it is helpful. And I think it will provide some clarity for our special educators and others in local school districts in the coming weeks.
Thank you very much, and thank you to all of our union leaders who are helping us get through this time and providing us with information. I truly appreciate it.
Julie?
We did have a question. Ellen in Grand Rapids. Ellen, you are live with your question on third grade reading. Ellen? All right. We have one question from Mary Balkovich in Warren, Michigan. Mary, you're live. Go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. We have it's a generalized question. Our district, thank God, have decided to pay all employees if they're not working. However, the custodial staff is still reporting to work. Even we're scheduled all week as of right now. What determines if you're an essential employee or a non-essential employee to be able to abide by the governor's stay-at-home law?
That is the executive order fleshes that out. There is some guidance if there's any lack of clarity or ambiguity associated therewith. There is some guidance about how to reach out and get clarity around that important issue.
Okay, thank you.
We had a question from someone, but it seemed to have dropped. And actually, we've had a number of people ask, how can parents help pressure legislators? Was a really good question that was asked by at least two people. Dr. Rice, do you have any recommendations? And I would also open this up to our union presidents if they have thoughts.
Well, I defer to our union leaders on this. Our parents, our teachers, our support staff members, our administrators, they're all voters, and our 148 state legislators care about what their constituents think. But I defer to our union leaders.
Thanks, Dr. Rice. This is Paula Herbert, and I would just advise that parents and families reach out to their local legislators, talk about what's been happening locally to ensure that their own students are getting exactly what they need from their education professionals in the community. They should also make sure that they're talking to them about how important it's been over the last few weeks that the education professionals, both in the classroom and on the buses and in the food service areas, have been in promoting and doing the good service of the community throughout this entire crisis, and will continue to do good work throughout this crisis. We've been working with the Department of Education and with our sisters and brothers and all the other unions to ensure that students across the state are getting exactly what they need, and we're finding creative ways, we're finding new ways. It's like I said yesterday, educators aren't just building the plane in the air, they're fabricating the parts as we go along. And if parents deliver that message to their legislators, talking about how important the role of the educator right now in this unprecedented time of crisis, and get that message to them, that's great. Go to MEA.org. They can look up their legislators, write letters, make phone calls, send emails, and be specific that, yes, it's about pay to ensure that they're on it for the work that they're doing, but talk about the work that everybody is experiencing locally from their community educators.
Paul is right on target, and I just want to highlight how important parents are. There's no one more influential with legislators than the people who vote in their district, especially the parents of kids in our schools. So it's just so incredibly important for parents to weigh in. And like the MEA website, our website isn't just limited to our members using that tool to contact legislators. So the websites or calling directly, a parent's voice is extremely, extremely powerful. We appreciate the questions.
Paula and David are absolutely correct. All politics, quite frankly, are local. And when parents go face-to-face or talk directly with an elected official at any level, that makes it local for that politician. And that has much more impact, not to diminish the importance of labor union leadership, but the rank and file members and the parents and family members have a much more lasting impression on people who sit in those chairs and make decisions, in this case, on who's going to get paid and who isn't. And those are the real issues. Those are the bread and butter issues. That's what matters to the custodian and the bus driver and the person that's cleaning up the messes left over. Those are the ones that count, and you have to bring that home. Put a face on it, not just a voice, but a face. I'm in full agreement.
Thank you very much. I've just got two final questions that I wanted to summarize because we've had several people asking very similar things. So, Dr. Rice, we have a lot of members who are concerned about if they're not able to get their professional development during this time, how will they be able to maintain their certification and get recertified without professional development?
It's a great question. We initially offered this guidance with the caveat or with the premise that this was going to be a three-week period. We can certainly reflect upon this in light of the fact that it is longer. We'll be doing that immediately and reissuing some reflections on that. It's a good point. I appreciate it being raised today.
Thank you. And then one last question, although there's been a number of questions that given the disparity in access to computers into technology and some of our students from disadvantaged backgrounds are experiencing additional hardships related to this crisis. For instance, we have a number of students who rely on taking college entrance exams through the schools. Is there any discussion of finding ways to waive testing fees or provide vouchers so those students are able to take college entrance exams?
So the answer is yes. There have been discussions associated with that. There have been discussions with the College Board about how to make optional SAT available, about how to make AP available at a distance or AP tests available at a distance. The broader issue of virtual learning is something that we're leaning into hard now with thought partners. There's going to be more discussion on this and more sharing soon. But you should know that your union leaders are going to be involved in those expanded and accelerated conversations about virtual learning. We share the concerns raised about equity and access, and we are going to have to do our level best in the state of Michigan to try to figure out how to close those access and equity gaps that exist. And they exist, as people are well aware, from the UP to the Indiana border, from one Great Lake to the other. So we've got a lot of work to do in this regard. But we're committed, particularly as this crisis unfolds, we're committed to leaning into that work and to trying to get something accomplished relative to virtual learning that is broader and more comprehensive than would otherwise have been the case if this were a shorter crisis.
Thanks, Dr. Rice. That's about all the time we have for questions, although we are continuing to update our websites at AFT, at AFSCME, at MEA, and continuing to push out the information that the Department of Education, that Dr. Rice and his staff are doing such a remarkable job putting together. But at this time, we don't have any more time for questions with Dr. Rice, so I'd like to ask President Hecker to introduce our next speaker. Thank you, Dr.
Rice. Thank you, Dr. Rice, and to all the participants for your great questions. We're now joined by Michael Lohman. Michael's from the AFT Health Issues Department. He has worked on safety and health issues with education and healthcare employees for 20 years. Before working for the American Federation of Teachers, Michael was a teacher and a school custodian. Thank you for being with us, Michael.
Thank you, David, and I'm glad to be able to be on this call. First of all, I want to assure our members that the AFT is working tirelessly to make sure that you have all the latest up-to-date information on this outbreak, and especially for those on the front line, whether a nurse, whether food service staff, whether a bus driver, or those that are still working in daycare centers, and that's just to name a few. We are working to make sure that they have the appropriate information and protection necessary to do their jobs safely. And speaking of information, as you pointed out earlier, David, I'd also like to refer people to the websites, the AFT Michigan website, as well as the AFT.org website, which has a lot of information on it. And know that our friends at AFSCME and MEA also have very valuable information to share. And also the CDC website at cdc.gov is really the go-to site for the latest updates as well as questions and answers. Now, I know that you all are hearing this over and over, but it bears repeating. I urge you to continue to wash your hands often and to also practice social distancing. Now, we currently know that the virus is thought to be spread between people who are in close contact with one another, which is about within 6 feet, and through respiratory droplets produced when an infected person coughs or sneezes, as these droplets can then land in the mouth or nose of the people nearby or possibly be inhaled into the lungs. It's also possible to be exposed by touching a surface or object that has the virus on it and then touching your own mouth, nose, or eyes, but this is not thought to be the main way that the virus spreads. And that's why social distancing as well as hand washing continue to be so extremely important for you to be able to protect yourself. For those of you that are still working, again, be sure to practice the social distancing to the extent that you can and keep washing those hands. If you are assigned to clean and disinfect, be sure to wear gloves and have good ventilation or open windows, as some of those cleaning agents can be toxic. And please follow the directives of your local and state government. Finally, I want to say we also need to think about our mental health. If you are feeling alone or isolated, reach out to someone, whether it's a friend, whether it's a coworker, whether it's a relative. Also, perhaps the school district employee advisory service is still available. And if we all support each other, we can get through this. And I'll be glad to take specific questions based on the most up-to-date information that I have. So if you do have a question, please press zero, and you'll be put into a line. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Michael. We have a question from Ron Howerly in Centerline, Michigan. Ron, you're live.
Hello, sir. Thank you for taking my call. Concerned about PPE protocols for districts for those who are requiring our brothers and sisters to report to work, such as the ones delivering the thousands of meals every day.
Yes, Ron. What I will say to you, at this point, the CDC is not recommending that those individuals wear any kind of a respirator. Now, they can certainly wear gloves, and I would still say that they need to keep their hands washed frequently. But as you know, and as most everybody else knows, at this point, there's a definite shortage of the appropriate PPE. So the focus is on our healthcare workers who are dealing directly with ill patients. So at this point, the CDC is not recommending that folks who go into the schools, whether it's food service, whether it's the bus drivers, actually wear PPE other than protecting themselves with gloves and hand washing.
Thank you.
Thank you. And now we are turning to Rhonda Schock from St. Clair Shores. Have a question. Rhonda, you are live.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Dr. Rice, Governor Whitmer, Paula Herbert, and Mike Woven for taking time to talk to educators and answer our questions. My question was, I just wondered if the CDC has any recommendations to the Michigan Department of Education for schools to ensure the safety of students and staff upon our return to school.
Rhonda, I would say that as of yet, I haven't seen any of that. Now, they are constantly updating their information. So what I would recommend for you is to go on cdc.gov on a regular basis and see what, if anything, that they come out in terms of guidance.
Thank you.
And then we have one last question on this front from Renee Pledge from Melvindale, Michigan. Renee, go ahead.
Hi. Thank you, everyone. I'm calling because I'm a mother of a child who has cystic fibrosis. I also work as a paraprofessional in an elementary school. And when we are allowed to go back to school, my concern is, one, my son, there's no immunization for this. I would bring home, because we're on quarantine until this is over, I would bring home the virus to my child. One, will I be protected with my job and pay? And two, my son is on an IEP. Will he get school service?
The only thing that I can really address in terms of that question, I can't address the education part of it, but I would still stress that when you return to school, continue the hand washing and possibly the social distancing. That would be the only thing that I could say at this point.
Renee, this is David Hecker. Can I ask, do you work in Melville Schools or another school district?
I'm sorry,
oh,
David, was that
what?
Question for me?
For Renee. Do you work in Melvindale Schools or another district?
I apologize. I disconnected
no
Renee after she asked her question.
No
but
problem.
If you want to answer it, and David, still with how you with where you were going with that.
You know, I just wondered so we could, given the her son's health issues he's dealing with and the nature of her question, I just wanted to make sure we could talk with her after this call, but the appropriate union talking to her after this call.
We do have that information, and we will follow
yeah.
up, and we've got a number of people
Great.
Whose questions we're not going to get to that we will make sure
right.
to do the best we can to follow up with folks. I do have a
right.
question from Tony Coral in Hamtramck. Corey, Tony, I'm sorry, Tony, you're live.
Thanks, Julie. My question I'll start with a statement first. There's a lot of misinformation out there about how long the virus remains live, like on surfaces and in the air. Is there anything more solid and kind of trustworthy that you can answer about how long that virus stays live? Thank you.
Tony, unfortunately, no. They are still saying that it could be anywhere from 2 days to 2 weeks, and also it depends on the surface that it lands on. But no, the research just isn't out yet, and that's the best information that you know is available at this point.
All right. So I think that we've answered many questions, but we are running out of time. So at this point, thank you all for your questions. I'm going to turn it over to President Roerig. Go ahead.
Thank you, Michael, for sharing your expertise and answering many of our members' questions. And also thank you to our AFSCME Council 25 members for joining us on this call today. The work you do, the support you give our schools, and the public in general is so important, now more than ever. We will continue to keep you updated via email and also on our website, both here at Council 25 and at AFSCME.org. Do what you do because you do make Michigan happen.
Thank you. Thank you, Larry, for your leadership all the time, but especially throughout this period. And thank you to our experts who joined this call, and thank you to the members of MEA, AFSCME Council 25, and AFT Michigan. The work you do to serve the students of Michigan is tremendous under ordinary circumstances, which is why we're all incredibly proud of how active members have united to deal with this crisis. We're going to keep you informed and updated throughout this ordeal, as Larry said. Visit aftmichigan.org or your union-specific webpage to find resources and information on the coronavirus and to sign up for our email list. Sister Herbart?
It looks like we might have lost President Herbart.
I'm here.
Oh, great. I'm here.
Thank you. So sorry. As members of MEA, we've always known that Governor Whitmer and Superintendent Rice, along with my brothers David and Larry, are champions of education. But their leadership in these trying times shows why it is so important that we work hard to get strong leaders and supporters of public education into office. Thank you to our members and to the members of Michigan for all that you are doing to support our students and families. You make me so proud every day to represent you. We'll keep you updated as well through emails and our website, MEA.org, to get coronavirus resources out to you. Thank you so much for joining us today, everyone, and try and stay safe and secure. Have a great day.
Thank you, everyone, so much. A recording of this call will be available on our website later in the day today. We'll also be providing additional information about the governor's shelter in place or stay at home, stay safe order and what that means for all of us moving forward. If you have additional questions, as always, reach out to your union, and we will do our best to field them as we can. Thank you all, and have a great day.
Thank you, sister.
Thank you.